of the Lord for history's final hour.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
He trains doctors to treat patients. I'm going to let him tell you about his amazing, amazing findings. Please go right ahead. Give us the background.
Well, I first started as a young man working at Argonne National Laboratory, and I had been an experimental scientist for several years, did a lot of work in nuclear. And At one point, I decided I wanted to do some volunteer work, and a woman in my neighborhood was senselessly killed one day on the streets of Joliet, and I thought, well, maybe I can see what I can do about crime and violence in this country and see if I could do anything at all. So thinking about it, I realized that the people most likely to commit a crime are people getting out of prison. So I became a prison volunteer, and before I knew it, people kept coming up to me and saying, hey, Bill, I hear you're going to the prison. Maybe I can come too. And within a couple of years, I had about 125 people doing sort of naive things that prison volunteers do. But my real education started.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought for just a moment here. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Bill Walsh. Go right ahead.
Well, I began to meet up with families that had produced a criminal. We launched an ex-offender program really to as an effort in crime prevention, because we realized that about 50% of all the people in this prison were going to get out in 5 years. And we thought it was probably not a good idea for them to be hungry and homeless, because these are pretty dangerous people and they know how to make money fast. So we, again, somewhat naively launched into an ex-offender program, trying to help hundreds of these guys as they walked out of prison, trying to make sure they had jobs or at least opportunities. Well, when I met the family, that was the beginning of my real understanding or my real education about behavior. Most of the people in prison in Illinois are minorities, and they come from a really disadvantaged neighborhoods where there's a lot of difficulty, and it's easy to understand why they would go wrong in their behavior. But I kept running into so-called good families from the suburbs where the parents appeared to be caring and capable and had brothers and sisters who were just fine, and yet this one child wound up doing some terrible things and was in prison. And they basically told me that there was something wrong with this child from the time he was born. And that was a big news to me, because I always thought it was life experiences and lack of love and poor parenting and things like that that caused a behavior disorder. Well, anyhow, that's how I got started. I began to wonder, what is the cause of crime and behavior disorders? And these families were telling me, some of them said they knew that when the child was 6 and 7 months old, they would try to cuddle the baby and push away. By the time the child was 2 or 3 years old, some of them talked about how the child was harming the family pets. And I've met a couple of families who said as a very young child, it was torturing and actually murdered the family pet. It horrified their parents. Some of these kids were in the family was often in counseling by the time he was 4 years old, and then he was on medication by the time he was 6 or 7. And they just said that they tried to do everything they could. But they couldn't love the problem away, and all the counseling and all the services didn't work. They wound up in prison. So that got me wondering and realizing that we really didn't know the cause of a behavior disorder. And being at a research laboratory, I started wondering whether or not it had anything to do with their body chemistry or brain chemistry.
And I think that was really such an important thing, because that's what nobody's really talked about until recently. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Dr. Walsh started out certainly as a volunteer in prisons, trying to figure out what we could do to help the prisoners. And a lot of them came from bad parts of town and poor areas. But there were some of them came from middle-class families, and they were certainly good families, but all of them told Dr. Wallace the same thing, and that is that the child almost from birth was different, and they were not loving, and some of them actually would torture the animals and would actually kill the animals. So there was something different about these children who went on to become criminals and ended up in prison, and all the other children in the family were fine, but these children were not. And so Dr. Wallace, of course, working at a research facility, did have research access for information, and so he began wondering, is there something about the metabolism of the brain? Please pick up the story there.
Well, since I was at Argonne, we had some of the world-class chemistry analysis methods and first-class scientists who were able to do this work. And I started collecting blood and urine samples and hair samples from criminals and ex-convicts, but also people in the prison. What I found was that after about a year of experiments, we had a lot of data that didn't make any sense. But until we stumbled on metal metabolism, we found that the criminals had very unusual levels of trace metals like zinc, copper, iron, manganese, and things like that. And
how about aluminum? Does aluminum play a part, or lead or mercury?
Lead and mercury definitely were abnormal in these people. So our first formal experiment, is I found 24 families that in the same family there was a child from hell, a child who was very frequently violent and had a history of harming other people regularly, assaultiveness and destruction of property. And in the same family, the all-American boy, a wonderfully behaved child who was a good student.
A difference in their metabolism as far as the chemistry of their hair and blood samples?
Excuse me, that's exactly what we found. When we got our data back, we did a double-blind controlled study like you're supposed to, like scientists do. And the first thing I noticed, when we broke the code and looked at the levels of the metals, we found the striking thing that we first found was that the violent kids had higher levels of lead and cadmium compared to their brothers living in the same environment. So across 24 different families, you would guess that the exposure would be the same, but they had much higher levels of lead and cadmium, which we now understand is because they don't have the ability to regulate metals properly, and we have protective proteins in our body that protect us against toxic metals. They don't have that system working well. But then we also found two other oddities in their metal metabolism. Half of them had a very high copper to zinc ratio, high copper and low zinc. And these are kids who the family said had episodes of violence. They said, well, they're really a good kid, but every so often he just, it's like a volcano going off or a runaway train. He has this horrible temper, bad things happen. And after that, he has remorse and is sorry that it happened. But we found a second group that had the opposite chemistry, in which they had low levels of copper. And these are the ones that when we talked to the families, they said, well, he's mean and nasty all the time. And he has fascinated with weapons, and he's oppositional, defiant, never has a good day, and never has any remorse. Nothing's ever his problem. And so those are the people that psychiatry calls antisocial personality disorder, or sociopaths, or psychopaths. And we found these young children who had just classic symptoms of that, you know, fascination with fire and things like that. So that's how we got started. And the rest of it, that was really about 35 years ago. And since that time, along with doctors and scientists, we've studied more than 10,000 cases of behavior disorders, including 800 felons. I've interviewed and tested people like Charles Manson, Richard Speck. I've worked with coroners and medical examiners. If you recall the McDonald's massacre down in San Ysidro, California, where George Huberty went in and shot and killed 23 people. The next day I was called by the medical examiner, and he sent me a few body parts that we did chemical analysis on. It. We found out that he was actually cadmium poisoned. And so I think I have the world's, in fact, I know I do, I have the world's biggest biochemistry database for behavior. And eventually I started working with famous Dr. Carl Pfeiffer. Are you familiar with Carl Pfeiffer?
No, I'm not. I've heard the name, but I really don't know him at all.
He was at one time nominated for a Nobel Prize by Linus Pauling, which he did not get it, but I think he may have deserved it. He was a man who had studied 20,000 schizophrenics, and he found that he had become disillusioned with drug therapies for schizophrenics, and he discovered that he could really help most of the schizophrenics by studying their brain chemistry and studying their nutrient levels. And he found that if he found that they had abnormalities in certain amino acids and vitamins and minerals, that he was able to normalize their brain chemistry to a pretty large extent. He had supposedly, from what everything I've read and heard, reports of a couple of thousand people who recovered completely.
And this is what's so amazing, the thought that this is reversible, but it's all about the chemistry, and you have to know what's wrong with the chemistry, and this is not recognized by doctors and by psychiatrists. But go right ahead.
Yeah, there's a, for example, I've followed on his work and the work of the great Abram Hawker from Canada, who the two of them were colleagues, and what I now know is that as brain science has advanced, we're now getting a clear understanding of what schizophrenia is and what depression is and a lot of mental disorders. And basically it has a lot to do with neurotransmitter activity, chemicals like serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine that are not where the activity is not what it ought to be, where there's abnormalities in their brain function. And we're now learning that there are nutrients that can have a great, powerful, beneficial effect for these people. See, the problem with drug medications, psychiatric medications, is that they're foreign molecules. And when you put powerful foreign molecules in the brain, it does not produce normalcy. You wind up with a abnormal condition. And not only maybe a change in behavior, but or side effects, but it just basically can cause striking problems. So we're actually, my group is not, and I am not really necessarily opposed to medications if they work and help people, and some of these medications do. But it seems like the medical world and the psychiatric world believes, for example, that schizophrenia is a single condition. If you read DSM-4, which is about to be DSM-5, the psychiatrist's manual for describing these conditions, they treat schizophrenia like a single condition with several variations. Well, I've got this huge chemical database that it's really clear that there are at least three major, completely different conditions that they call schizophrenia.
Okay, what are those three conditions?
Well, one of them is what I call undermethylation. And these are people who are low in this chemical called methyl, which is just the simplest organic chemical, copper with a few hydrogens attached. And people who are undermethylated, because of the biochemistry and brain chemistry, they tend to be very low in serotonin activity. And they also have abnormalities in a neurotransmitter called NMDA. But that's one group. But the interesting thing about them is that these are people who have a thought disorder. Their primary symptom is delusions. They believe things that can't possibly be true. A typical delusion is they might believe the CIA or the FBI is after them. Or I've heard dozens of schizophrenics tell me that they thought there was a satellite in outer space that was beaming painful rays into their brain. I had one man who came in wearing metal all over his body, and he did that because he said if he took the metal off, his body would float up into outer space and he would die. So that's one of the three types, but it's a thought disorder. And then the other group, the more common group, that is a classic paranoid, the second group, which is the classic paranoid schizophrenia, their number one classic symptom is auditory hallucinations. They have the sensation of hearing voices either within their head or even outside their head. And this usually they believe it's the voice of God or the voice of the devil saying condemning terrible things about them and suggesting they do awful things. And then there's a third type that's a little bit less common.
What is the chemistry of the second type, where they have the auditory hallucination?
Interestingly, they're over-methylated.
Okay.
The reverse of the first type and requires a completely different direction for treatment. And then there's a third type that has to do with severe oxidative stress. We call it pyrrole schizophrenia. It's just a name that we've got from work that Hoffer and Pfeiffer had done before. But basically, they have so many free radicals marauding in their brains that it alters the NMDA function. It causes low glutamate activity at that, which is one of the neurotransmitters at NMDA, and appears to be cause of what's happened to them.
And so basically, of course, the way to approach this is not simply by a psychiatrist talking to people, but it's trying to change the chemistry of the brain. Was that the approach?
It's true, but the problem is that mainstream psychiatry regards schizophrenia as a single condition, and right now the treatment of choice are powerful medicines called atypical antipsychotics. Things like Clozaril, Zyprexa, Geodone, there's about 8 or 9 of them now. So they give the same treatment to every one of them, even though it's an umbrella term that encompasses at least 3 very completely different disorders.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Bill Walsh, and we're talking about the origin of so much mental disease. And Dr. Stan, of course, basically we're not simply talking about schizophrenia, we're talking about depression, we're talking about manic depression, we're talking about behavioral disorders and criminal activity and autism and attention deficit disorders and all of these things, they all anxiety disorders, they all fit under the same umbrella. In other words, do you feel that these are all primarily metabolic?
Yes, I do. People that have these problems have chemical imbalances in their brain, and the how the brain works is now becoming clearer and clearer with modern science. And the odd thing is that most of the best science, most of the best research, is being done by pharmaceutical companies or universities that are funded by the drug companies. And yet the drug companies, they do this wonderful work, but they have absolutely the wrong objective. Their goal is always to get the next billion-dollar drug. And it's really a shame, because right now there's enough knowledge and understanding that they have the ability, or they would certainly within a short time, to normalize the brain without drugs.
Well, have you heard anything at all about the diet that certain people have actually treated some of these psychiatric and even criminal activity with an entirely different type of diet, high veg and diet, and these people seem to have gotten better? Is there any truth to that?
There is truth to that. One of the first people that got famous doing that was Barbara Stitt in Ohio, and she got parolees fresh out of reformatories and forced them. She was in charge of their parole, and she forced them and made them get on a greatly improved diet, and the statistics of what happened with her group was pretty amazing, and she got world famous because of this. And others have done this, but the tricky part is with behavior and with criminals is that they're not all the same. There are a number of imbalances in nutrients that can cause tremendous behavior disorders, but they're not all the same. So you can't give the same nutrients to the same person, to each person. For example, the antisocial personality group, the ones who become career criminals, and we call them sociopaths or psychopaths, we found that they all have elevated blood histamine, they all have low blood spermine, they all have elevated pyrroles in their urine, they all have hypoglycemia. There's an odd combination of chemistries that pretty much all of them have. And then if you look
But would a lot of these have problems as far as lead and cadmium is concerned? Because this is one of my concerns, that I've come to conclude that a lot of the people, especially the blacks, seem to have abnormalities, excessive amounts of lead. Is that a factor or not?
Well, it is really a factor. It's very clear that elevated lead levels have a lot to do and correlate with bad behavior. And I've studied a lot of different races and to see if there are any basic differences. And one of the problems with black people is many of them, a high proportion of them, live in inner cities where there's just a lot of exposure. And I really haven't seen any striking differences in body chemistry or brain chemistry between Caucasians, blacks, and Asians. But there's no doubt that exposure to lead and cadmium and mercury can really affect the person's behavior.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. And this is Dr. Stan. Dr. Wallace is simply saying there's no doubt that lead and calcium, but lead and cadmium, and what was the other metal?
Well, mercury is probably number three.
Okay, lead, cadmium, and mercury really have a profound impact, certainly upon criminal activity. And basically, of course, until we begin to recognize these things, and of course, a lot of the blacks live in the inner city. There's all sorts of pollution there. And of course, those of you who listen to us regularly, you know where the source of some of that pollution is. We've been talking about this, but now here are the scientific studies. Of course, Dr. Walsh has probably the largest database, certainly, of blood chemistries and hair chemistries dealing with all of these abnormalities. And there's definite abnormalities. Now, do you think there's any genetic differences between black and white as far as criminal activity associated with lead, cadmium, and other metals?
Actually, I don't think so. I think it has a lot more to do with poverty than it does with their actual racial differences. Although there are chemical differences in the races, and there are different because they did evolve somewhat differently over a few thousand years, but I don't see any great differences in the chemistry of these behavior disordered people. I have 1.5 million chemical analyses in blood and urine of behavior disordered people.
1.5 million specimens?
It's a huge database. And when you look at that database, violent people, behavior disordered children and adults, are completely different or strikingly different from the rest of the population. And if you normalize their chemistry, in many cases, their behavior just normalizes.
And basically, of course, this is the most amazing thing. And basically, of course, when you tell, I mean, you don't have to convince me. It's taken 40 years for me to come around to this conclusion. Certainly only because I've had association with some people who've been trying to tell me, but it takes me a long time before I really get to learn and understand. But I think you're absolutely right. What you have uncovered explains so much of what I've seen and heard about through the years, but it didn't make sense until now. You suddenly have this massive database and you can correlate it, so you can actually alter the criminal activity of some of these perpetual criminals?
Well, yes. I have to say one thing. I've done outcome studies where we, years after treating these people, we find out what happened. I mean, how many of them got better? How many of them continued to be better? And to what degree do they improve? And are they still taking the nutrient therapy that we gave them? And we learned that we have very poor success with anyone who is abusing hard drugs or really seriously abusing alcohol. But what we learned is that I never really achieved my goal of being able to turn ex-convicts into pussycats, so to speak, have them become okay in society. But we did find out that working with kids, with children, say, under the age of 12, 13, 14, before they get into cocaine and various illegal drugs, we have a very high success rate, and we publish this in psychiatric journals, and I'm sure that our success rate, as measured in these careful studies, is better than anything I've ever seen from drug therapies. One thing I'd like to mention is that it's not just a matter of deficiencies. One of the surprises I had early on was that I learned that nutrient overloads can actually cause more mischief than deficiencies. The number one deficiency in behavior is zinc deficiency. And if a person is zinc deficient, they won't be able to handle lead, cadmium, and mercury properly. They'll be unusually sensitive to those toxics. But the one of the major nutrients that's elevated in behavior very often is copper. Copper is especially interesting because if you look at where dopamine and norepinephrine, how they're made, norepinephrine is made, that these are brain chemicals that are really important in behavior, and they're made from dopamine, and the chemical reaction wherein the brain makes norepinephrine is dominated by copper. Copper is a cofactor, and normally copper is supposed to be controlled in your bloodstream. It's homeostatically controlled if you're healthy and if that system's working.
Now, does magnesium play any part in this at all? Is there a relationship at all between magnesium and zinc, or is it primarily the copper-zinc ratio that's so important?
Well, copper and zinc sort of oppose each other. If a person's high in copper, you can be sure they're going to be on the low end of zinc.
Okay.
Magnesium, however, is something that's really important and very often is deficient in people with behavior or even mental problems. Magnesium is, with respect to the brain, it's a calming nutrient.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, there's so much here, and we're only going to be able to just touch on this, because Dr. Wallace has a great book, Nutrient Power. We're going to be carrying this. We can't carry all the books that come in, but when I saw this and I read this, to me, this is one of the greatest revelations, and we will have his book available. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and how can we influence then, or how are you able to influence the copper-zinc ratio? Do you increase the copper? Do you lower the zinc? What do you do?
Well, these therapies were developed by the great Carl Pfeiffer, Prince of New Jersey, about 30 years ago. And if one has an elevation in copper, that means that they're going to tend to have very high anxiety. And people with that condition might have, for example, an anxiety disorder or panic disorder, and also have difficulty sleeping, because if you have high copper, not only will you have higher norepinephrine, you'll be high in adrenaline, have trouble settling down, and most paranoid schizophrenics are high copper. And one surprise I had in studying behavior and mental illness was that there are about six or seven nutrients that seem to dominate with respect to the imbalances you find. And I was confused, for example, why is copper present in 68% of ADHD kids? Why is it present in more than 90% of autistic children? Why is it part and parcel of paranoid schizophrenia? Eventually it dawned on me that these six or seven particular nutrients just happen to have one thing in common. They all had a major role in the synthesis of neurotransmitters, or the regulation of these neurotransmitters, and that's why they have so much to do with mental health. And if they're imbalanced, either from genetics or through their diet, there'll be something wrong with their brain chemicals. See, we don't start life with a lifetime. We're not born with a lifetime supply of serotonin, dopamine, and the neurotransmitters. The brain's a chemical factory, and it makes these things all day, every day. And the only raw materials for making serotonin and dopamine and all these important brain chemicals are nutrients, amino acids, vitamins, and minerals. So if a person has really an abnormal level of one of these ingredients for our brain chemicals, you can expect there to be something wrong with your brain chemistry. And you don't necessarily need a drug to balance it.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a minute here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Dr. Walsh is making a very important point, and that is that certainly all of these abnormalities in the chemical structure and function of the brain. All of these various issues have to do with the formation of neurotransmitters. Now, these are the vehicles by which our brain cells are able to communicate and function. And, of course, if the certainly the brain doesn't have proper nutrition, amino acids, vitamins, minerals, it can't make the neurotransmitters. And if you don't make the neurotransmitters, your brain doesn't work right. It can be overactive, it can be underactive. You can sleep, you will not sleep. But you have to have the proper balance. So you go ahead and pick the story up from there.
Well, let me give you an example. Another really common deficiency has to do with B6. Vitamin B6. And if you look at how the various brain chemicals are synthesized in the brain, B6 is probably number one. So, for example, if the very last step of making serotonin from there's a chemical called 5-HTP that then gets converted to serotonin, well, if you look at that chemical reaction, the primary cofactor, sort of like an enzyme, it's a factor that enables that reaction to go properly is B6. So if a person has, say, a genetic or for any reason a striking deficiency in B6, they're going to be low in serotonin, and they'll be prone to depression. And yes, you could give them Prozac or Paxil or one of these SSRI medications, and they might get better or at least have less depression, although possibly with some nasty side effects. But it seems a lot more scientific and direct to just simply normalize their B6 level. And I've worked with more than 3,000 people with clinical depression, and it's amazing how many of them simply have a B6 or a zinc deficiency, or they might have a folate abnormality. Methylation is another very key part of brain chemistry, and the methyl and folate levels and ratios have a lot to do with this process called reuptake. We now know that it's not the amount of serotonin you have that's important. It's the reuptake, the ability of a brain cell to, you might say, suck up back the serotonin that it shot out when the brain cell fired. And it all has to do with certain proteins that are embedded in these brain cells and their passageways for the returning serotonin or dopamine or whatever the neurotransmitter is. And that's really the dominant factor. And really the most exciting thing to me recently is this new science of epigenetics. It's something that most people are unfamiliar with. I gave a talk in Dallas this last week, and I asked for a show of hands how many people had ever heard of epigenetics. And I think only about 5% of them had ever heard of it. But everyone's going to know about it in 5 years. Because we're now finding out that, for example, we now know that cancer is primarily epigenetic. We know that heart disease is, and it's now appearing that most forms of mental illness are epigenetic. And what that means, it's not really genetics directly. It's not the DNA directly, but it's the chemicals that attach to the DNA and regulate gene expression. In other words, every gene you have in your body, and we all have more than 20,000 of them, they've all got one job, and that's to make protein. But you need different chemicals in different parts of the body. So a lot of these genes have to be switched on or switched off, depending on whether it's your liver, your kidneys, or your eyeballs, or whatever. And that when that goes wrong, when the chemicals that attach to your DNA, and it's called bookmarking, when that goes awry, that seems to be the cause of many disorders, including autism, a couple of forms of schizophrenia, some of the behavior disorders, certainly post-traumatic stress disorder, and OCD. And the beauty of this is scientists have tried for 40 years to develop genetic therapies where you can actually change the DNA in a human being. And that's been pretty much a washout. I mean, with all the millions, hundreds of millions of dollars gone into that research, very little has come out of it. But the early work on epigenetics shows that they're able to correct the deviant bookmarks. And this might be eventually the best way to treat schizophrenia, behavior disorders, autism, anxiety, depression. It's coming. And it's within 5 years, it's something that we'll all know about.
And I think for our listeners out there, basically your gene is like a little machine that produces proteins, and you can turn the machine on or you can turn the machine off, or at least your body will, or chemicals will. But basically, if the gene is on, why, it's going to be producing proteins. If it's turned off, it's not going to. Would that be a fair estimate?
That's exactly right. And now we know what chemicals are turning in on and off, and they happen to be nutrients. And nutrients that we can, and we can alter gene expression. This is something we never had a handle on before, and it's all very recent science, and it gives us a lot more power in treating with natural substances.
And of course, this was going to play a large part in the treatment of cancer. Rather than certainly trying to burn it out or poison it, if you can change the gene function, you can actually change the pattern of the cancers. And this is so vitally important. This is just on the edge of all sorts of exciting things. I think a lot of this has been known for some time, but at least now the general medical profession is beginning to find out about it. So what do you do about the methyl ether? Methylation too much or too little?
Yeah, that's one of the most important things in mental health is to normalize methylation. And if you have too little methylation, you'll have low serotonin levels, a tendency for depression, you'll have a tendency for obsessive compulsive behaviors, and the way to correct that really is to methylate these people. And in biochemistry, there's a cycle called the methylation cycle, which is supposed to keep your methyl level and your methyl capability normal. And so there are ways with nutrient therapies, and there's a number of different ways to do this. There's more than one way to skin a cat, and there's more than one way to fix a under-methylation. One of my favorite ways is to simply give them methionine, which is the amino acid from protein in our diet, which is where our methyl comes from. And so we either give that or SAMe, which is becoming a popular nutritional supplement. These are things you can get over the counter at Walgreens or wherever. But if a person is over-methylated, and if they have perhaps an anxiety disorder or postpartum depression or something like that, we find it's very effective to give them folic acid. And what's interesting about that is that we now know that folic acid has a striking impact on gene expression, on the regulation of gene expression. Methyl acts like a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, just like Prozac and Paxil, only it does it by a slightly different mechanism. Folic acid is actually a serotonin reuptake promoter, so it goes in the other direction. So if one knows what neurotransmitters are overactive or underactive, there are nutrient therapies that can have a very powerful effect in adjusting this and normalizing it.
Well, a lot of people now are taking vitamin B12, but they should be taking folic acid supplements as well.
Well, if a person, there are some people who need folic acid, and folic acid and B12 should be taken together, absolutely.
All right, fine. Well, do you have a web page or any place where people could go to get more information on this? I mean, I think your book is fascinating. We're not going to have a chance to talk about it tonight, but I just wanted to get all of this information out. But it's called Nutrient Power. That's Nutrient Power. But how can people get in touch with you and your work?
Well, our website has a lot of information. And the book can be, you can get the book from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, but actually you can get it cheaper from our website. The website is www.walshinstitute.org. We're a public charity, a not-for-profit public charity. Again, www.walshinstitute.org.
That's Walsh Institute.
Oh, W-A-L-S-H.
Right. Okay, fine. And Sydney, the information is vitally important because we have so many people today who really do have these problems, or they have children who have the problems, and if they're not properly treated, why is it going to go up, and there can be all sorts of problems all of their life. And if you can certainly get the metabolism, their brain back to normal, do an awful lot of the people improve and improve dramatically? What are the results of your treatment? Do we have any idea?
Yeah, I've done a number of outcome studies. We've also learned that there are some people that we really can't help. We thought we could help Down syndrome kids because their body and brain chemistries are very abnormal. But I did a study with the Chicago Downs Association, and we worked with about 20 of them, and it was a complete washout. It was a complete failure. However, behavior. We've done about 6 outcome studies and published 2 of them in behavior. And if give us a child with uncontrollable behavior, whether it's aggressive, assaulting other people, our success rate is a pretty close to 90% if we can get compliance. The hardest part is not finding out what's gone wrong with their brain chemistry and what's giving them this predisposition for bad behavior. It's getting compliance. You can imagine it's hard to get a 16-year-old oppositional defiant teenager to do anything, much less swallow a few capsules. And our treatment does require them to take some capsules of individualized treatment, you know, an individualized formulation of nutrients to normalize their chemistry. With respect to depression, it's about 85% based on the reports of the people we've worked with, and I've worked with 3,600 cases of people with clinical depression. With respect to schizophrenia, it depends on the type of schizophrenia they have. I just want to mention that one of the common forms of schizophrenia just happens to be gluten intolerance. And there are probably 100,000 people in America alone who have full-blown schizophrenia with lives that are really challenging throughout and you know, very unpleasant for them. And if they would just change their diet, the schizophrenia would go away. It's about 5% of all schizophrenics, and so it's not a really high number, but for them, it's everything. Well, and then if autism is another example of very, very disordered chemistry. I think with my colleagues and myself, we've probably seen as many autistics and studied them and got chemical results for them. I've seen more than 6,500 cases, and this is a completely different situation. It's a developmental disorder. We now know a lot about it. We know that these kids all have extraordinary oxidative stress. They have a myriad of problems. But the real mystery is, why is there an epidemic of autism throughout America and throughout the world? We know that it runs in families. We know that if a woman has identical twins and one of them develops autism, it's more than 60% likely that the other twin will become autistic. But if they're fraternal twins, born at the same time, sharing the same womb, if one becomes autistic, it's less than 10% that the other will be. So we know there's that DNA and you know, that kind of chemistry. Genetics has a lot to do with it.
Well, no, one of the things I would like to know is, on the autistic children, do you find that many of them have excesses of mercury or lead or the other chemicals, other metals?
Yeah, we do. They definitely have higher levels than their siblings living in the same environment. They do. And they have, I believe, one of the problems they have is they're very vulnerable to toxics like mercury and lead. And the reason is, I believe, it's becoming more and more clear. There's more and more evidence that autism is epigenetic in origin. And a lot of this happens before the baby is born. A lot of this happens between days 18 and 22 of gestation in the womb. And that's the point at which the body puts all of these different chemical bookmarks on the DNA that determines, which genes are expressed and which ones are silent.
Well, I've often wondered if perhaps some children can handle mercury better than others. In other words, some children certainly would not be able to excrete the mercury, and as a result it would remain toxic. Other children could. Is there any basis in that belief?
Yeah, there really is. We have protectors that are quite wonderful to protect us against toxic metals. Natural proteins like glutathione and something called metallothionein and cysteine, and there's a long list of them with funny names. But if a person, you know, we're exposed to toxics every day of our life. Just from breathing, we get a microgram of mercury every day. And from a typical American diet, we swallow down about 20 micrograms of mercury every day. And if we have tuna fish for lunch, it might be 50 micrograms. But we have these wonderful proteins that react with and make these things safe. But some people don't have the protectors at the right level. In other words, autistics are very low in a protein called glutathione. which is the first line of defense against toxic metal. And as a result, they're just much more sensitive to it, and the toxic metals cause what's known as free radicals. And free radicals, to me, are like pirates that maraud in the body and can do great damage. They can destroy brain cells or the myelin sheath around the brain cells, or they cause all kinds of mischief in the body. And that's what's called oxidative stress. And we know that virtually all of the mental disorders, these people have elevated oxidative stress. And that's one of the major parts of nutrient therapy is to normalize that, to provide the antioxidant function, so that if you do get exposed to a toxic metal, that your body can handle it. So it's sort of like the good guys and the bad guys. And in autism, you don't have enough of the good guys to fight off the toxics that come in every day.
And, you know, these children are just so tragic. I mean, you know, delayed in learning. Sometimes they just can't talk, or something they'll have, or they'd be withdrawn. And we've seen this dramatic increase in the incidence of autism from maybe 1 or 2 per 10,000 down. Now they say it's 1 in 88 children. It's about 1 in 65 boys, because it's more prevalent in boys. Well, great, great tragedy. Why is it so much more prevalent today than it was, say, 50 years ago?
Well, that's the great mystery, because we know there's a genetic component to it, but it can't be all genetics, because it takes centuries for mutations to occur. So it has to have something to do with the environment. And the recipe for autism, most people agree, is a predisposition at birth together with an environmental insult. And it now looks like the insults, whether it be mercury or vaccines or maybe some unfortunate drug the mother might be taking, it now appears that this has to do with gene regulation going awry. This, again, the epigenetics of what happens during birth, before birth.
Well, I hope our listeners out there have really enjoyed this. I know I have. Our guest, of course, has been Dr. Bill Walsh. And the information is vitally important, because it impacts on every one of us, if not on us, then our children, our grandchildren. The information needs to get out. The book, Nutrient Power, and we're going to carry it, because we think this is vitally important for you to have this information. And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program right here at Radio Liberty. And hang on for just a minute, Bill. Well, we have 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What's the message you would like to leave with our listeners out across America, indeed across the world? I ran into a fellow this last weekend. I was at a meeting in Long Beach. He told me he was from Japan and works with an office over in Japan. That there's about 20 or 30 Americans there, and they listen to these programs every day on the loudspeaker. But go right ahead. What is the message you'd like to get out to people?
Well, the great Carl Pfeiffer once said that for every drug that benefits a person, there's a natural substance that can achieve the same effect. And I think we're entering a new era, hopefully, in psychiatry, and I hope it happens quickly. For many, many years, we thought that the way psychiatry felt that the way to help a person with a mental problem was to put them on a couch, delve into their early childhood to try to figure out what might have gone wrong. And then for the last 50 years, realizing that it all had to do with brain chemistry and neurotransmitters and the molecular biology of the brain, they've been giving drug therapies because that's the only way they know how to alter brain chemistry. I think we're on the verge of a new era. And this new era, as brain science advances, we'll be able to use natural remedies and normalize the brain instead of using foreign molecules that result in abnormal conditions.
Absolutely. That's fascinating. Now, what are the pyrroles? We didn't get into that at all.
Pyrroles are natural chemicals in the body that are produced in the spleen and in the bone marrow. And they, for example, it's like A plus B gives hemoglobin plus pyrroles. So they're a byproduct of making something important that you really don't need. And the body clears it out of your system very quickly. The problem is, they strip B6 and zinc out of the body just really in a striking manner. And so these people have extraordinary low levels of B6 and zinc in their body. And that has a lot to do with with the amount of neurotransmitters, and because they're involved in the synthesis in the brain of that, and also the regulation of them. And anyway, the symptoms are really clear. It's present in 35% of autistics. It's present in about 18% of people with behavior disorders. It's present in 15% of schizophrenics. It's the primary chemical imbalance for one of the major groups of schizophrenia. It's also present in depression. And it's something that could be detected with a test that costs about $50 or $60. And if I've seen literally at least 3,000 or 4,000 people who were terribly afflicted who simply had a pyrrole disorder.
Well, we're going to look forward. I hope we can get you back again sometime. I'd love to take questions, but I just didn't want to interrupt what you were saying. God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Dr. Walsh, because this is just really touching on the edge of this. This is vitally important information. And ladies and gentlemen, we have to understand that most of what we're doing in the treatment of psychiatric disease, in fact, for many diseases, just is not effective. And certainly there are these, much of this has been known, they've known for 40 or 50 years about epigenetics, and this information has not been brought forward. Well, it is coming forward today. And we're going to have to get the information out and get doctors to start using these new techniques. And we're going to get Dr. Walsh on again and put together a 4-tape set. His book, Nutrient Power, we're going to be carrying it. You can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and we're going to, as I say, get together the talks with Dr. Walsh, and then I think we'll have some talks with Dr. Lorraine Dame, who told me 20 years ago that you put people onto a diet, why, of course, you could correct the schizophrenia. And at the time, I didn't want to believe that. Dr. Blaylock told me this almost a decade ago. Put these people, schizophrenics, on a diet, you'll cure it, and take them and put them onto a regular diet, it'll come back again. And, well, it was just too simplistic an explanation. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not always right, but sometimes, usually, after a while, I can begin to see the reason why these things occur. And once I had read the treatise by Dr. Walsh, I suddenly realized exactly, certainly, why Dr. Lorraine Day said what she did, why Dr. Blaylock said what he did. Incidentally, we do carry Dr. Blaylock's wonderful book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We have a couple of 4-tape sets of my interviews with Dr. Blaylock. They're all vitally important. We need to get them out. And if you are in a position to get them, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now, of course, as far as the vaccinations are concerned, children who do not take the vaccinations, almost no autism, ADD, ADHD, the vaccines are poisoning them. The Amish children, the Mennonite children, are not coming down with that. They know these things, and they're poisoning our children. And who in their right mind would do that? Well, the doctors don't know, and you need to get the documentation on the things we talk about here. We've got a great 4-CD set on autism, and we have information on autism. You need to get this information. You need to help us get it out across America. And then, of course, we do hope, if you haven't yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which will help you to actually pull all the loose ends together. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. Who really runs the world? Who is behind the people who run the world, and who is behind the people who run the world? And so, basically, Brotherhood of Darkness, you can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. We're going to cut off on the offers to get a case of Brotherhood of Darkness, not this week, but the end of next week, and after that, well, we're just going to go ahead and print them up. If you'd like to get a case of Brotherhood of Darkness and get them disseminated, and you've got to get people to read them. Doesn't do any good to give them a book, so you actually lend them the book. You never give them the book, you lend them the book. That way they have an obligation to read it and to get it back to you. So, again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to either buy the book, if you'd like to get, of course, Dr. Walsh's book, Nutrient Power, if you'd like to get certainly of my book by Dr. Russell Blaylock, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. All of these things are vitally important. You're going to have to learn about how to look after your own health. Unfortunately, there are evil and wicked people out there who are doing everything they can to block effective treatment. If you doubt that, you need to get either our 4-CD set on Dr. Brzezinski or the book, The Brzezinski Breakthrough. Here's a treatment for cancer, and they wanted to send Dr. Brzezinski to prison for 230 years. Why? Because he had a treatment for cancer, ladies and gentlemen. There really are evil and wicked people out there. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be views of Dr. Carl Pullman. Pullman, and of course, Dr. Pullman is a physicist. But he's been very interested in the background of the threat of an electromagnetic pulse attack. And this is not an imaginary threat. It's a very real threat. And it could either come from certainly flares on the sun, or it could come from an attack where an enemy of the United States, North Korea, Russia, China, some other country, could explode a thermonuclear device in the stratosphere up 200 or 300 miles above America, and the electromagnetic pulse which would be generated would come down and simply wipe out large segments of our certainly electric grid and actually push America back to the point where it was at the beginning or the middle of the 1800s. Dr. Pullman, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. One of the big vulnerabilities of our whole economy is that it's based on electrical signaling. The power generation that we need to keep our sewage systems working, our water supplies, our food cold, to pump the fuel that we have in storage tanks, all of these things depend on electricity, which is distributed by very large networks of wires that are connected by very vulnerable transformers that step up and step down the power. These transformers can be blown out by lightning, by surges that can come from solar flares. They're very rare, but they can also be very severe. And, of course, nuclear EMP provides a huge, very, very fast pulse of very high energy, lots of current, lots of voltage, blows these things out, and it takes literally months to build these transformers.
And you were mentioning this morning something I'd never heard about, and that there was some sort of a solar flare and it hit South Africa some years ago. And they were how long? Really, several years before they got their electric system really up and working properly?
Well, that's right, and their whole economy suffered because of that. There have been flares that have occurred typically during sunspot maximum. They show up as big times when the auroras, both north and south hemispheres, glow. And in some cases, they glowed so much you could even see them in twilight as opposed to the darkest of night. And these things, for example, in the 1800s, when the telegraph system was running, the telegraph wires acted like large antennas. The currents would surge through, and they would blow out the batteries that they used to energize the telegraph.
And, of course, that was in 1859, so we didn't have an electric grid at that time, but it just totally disrupted the telegraph system at that time.
Well, so, not exactly, because the clever operators knew there was current coming down the wire, so they pulled the batteries out of the circuit, and they used the flare-generated currents, and they could still send signals back and forth using that energy. But,
okay,
of course, when the flare died away, they were sitting there with dead batteries.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty, and our guest, Dr. Carl Pohlman. Well, Dr. Pohlman, was there any disruption then of the electrical grid at that time? In other words, as far as, I should say not electric grid, but as far as the telegraph system, how long was it before they got the telegraph system back up working?
Well, where they had batteries that they could substitute in, it wasn't very long. There were batteries that were used for other purposes that weren't connected to the network. So they could just replace the battery, and in most cases, the wires were still okay. But this isn't the case today with the transformers. There was one nuclear plant in the U.S. that had a very massive transformer that took several years to build, and it ground surge currents from a solar flare burned this thing up, and that whole plant was offline for a good part of a year.
All right, well, let's go to Alan, who's calling us from Spokane, Washington. Alan, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, sir, I did. I was going to ask you a question, your guest from the hour before.
All right, fine. Well, it's a little, well, what was you specifically wanted to know? Because
well,
he's gone.
He was talking about how people's diet and everything makes them criminals and all this. But in the Bible it says that everybody that is born, our soul was created by the Lord before the foundation of the earth. So why would it matter what a person ate?
Well,
because
your soul is one thing, your brain is an entirely different. Your brain is an organ, and it is basically the chemistry of your brain that's altered and the neurotransmitters in there, and that has nothing to do with your soul. But thank you so very much for calling, Alan. And basically, of course, our guest is Dr. Carl Pohlman, and we're actually talking about the issue here as far as the threat of an EMP attack. And I think the significant thing is we no longer produce the transformers in this country. How long would it take, Sifty, to replace the transformers if we had a couple of hundred of them go out here in America? Do we have any idea?
Well, if you started from scratch and built one, it might take 3 or 4 months, depending on the size. The problem is that these things are backlogged 3 years in ordering. So if you haven't a production capacity and an inventory of these things, power companies have inventories so they can replace them rapidly.
Hold that thought.
Hold that thought.
We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. My guest is Dr. Cole. Carl Pullman. And Dr. Pullman is simply saying that as far as the transformers are concerned, if we were to have an EMP attack, whether it be from a solar flare, wiping out some of the transformers all across America. And remember, all of our grid is interlocked. We should have breakers, major breakers in there. And so it's not all interlocked, and you would not get massive surges from state to state. But unfortunately, that is not the case. And basically, of course, these massive transformers are not built in the United States. And certainly, we only have a relatively small number of them here in the United States on standby. And if there was a major catastrophe, we would have to get these in from other countries. And usually, they're backlogged, several years in producing them. So we're talking really potentially several years without electric power. Would that be a fair estimate, Dr. Pullman?
Well, that's likely, especially in the regions that are hardest hit. And I would expect that some regions will have their transformers kidnapped for critical areas so that the problem will become a matter of national priorities. People's starvation, where they have to have power to maintain the food supply. We can't have all of the frozen food in the country rot. It has to be kept cold.
And so basically, Chris, what we're talking about, we'd lose refrigeration, but then we'd also lose the ability, say, to pump water in the cities. We'd lose the ability to pump the gasoline and diesel out of the tanks. And so we are so intricately involved with electricity that if we were suddenly to lose electricity in America, this would be a tremendous catastrophe, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, in a microcosm, this recent shutdown of the power systems on the cruise ship are a good example of what we'll see should we lose power completely. We have gas supplies, a good chance that those might still be working. All the gravity feed water supplies would work, but many of those depend on repumping to fill the top tanks. Skyscrapers might well be uninhabitable for years.
And so this would be certainly something that we should really should be concerned about. Now, what is being done to prevent any such a catastrophic event from taking place, either from a solar flare or from an enemy attack?
Well, there is a commission. There's a EMP commission that in the last 10 years has put a report together. This was some of the best minds in the laboratories of the nation, the physics laboratories, the various military that have expertise, the intelligence services, all got together and created this EMP commission, and they have a website, and you can go look at their report. The website is www.empcommission.org, and there are two laws, a Senate law and a House law that are kind of on the back burner. Everybody seems to be worried about data corruption and hacker attacks affecting our infrastructure. The House bill addresses the issue of EMP, but the Senate bill does not.
Well, if one House addresses it and the Senate doesn't, nothing gets accomplished. They have to both agree, don't they?
Well, they probably will, but it looks like the funding for this commission dried up about 3 years ago, and perhaps the people who were in putting it together, if you look at them, they have a lot of gray hair, and there's a relatively handful of graybeards that put all this stuff together. And these guys are retiring. I'm aware of a very capable facility design engineer, a personal friend of my wife, who passed away last year. And so the ability to build these facilities, in 1974, we were, TRW was building a SCADA system. SCADA is System Control and Data Acquisition. These systems are very vulnerable because they have wires that go long distances to send signals that are used to control things. You lose the control, and then you can't control the power. And then if the network, the communication network, depends on the power, and the power depends on the communication network, it's a chicken and egg, and both of them are scrambled, and you can't do anything at all.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the thing about this whole EMP business, and we've been studying this for some time, is that the people know what to do. Congress actually put together a commission, and they put out a report in 2004. We offer that report if you want to get it from us, nicely bound. Of course, you can get it off the Internet and take it down and bite it yourself. They also put out a report in 2008, the Congressional Commission report for 2008. And they said, we've got to do something. America certainly is vulnerable, and this would certainly disrupt our whole economy. And yet nothing has been done. They've known there was a danger for well over, well, probably at least 12 years, probably much longer than that. And it would only cost perhaps $1 billion a year over a 10-year period. We give that much away. We give that probably $40 billion a year away in foreign aid. You would think that they could spend at least $1 billion a year to protect the infrastructure of our society, because we've actually interviewed a number of people. We actually have a report from the Heritage Commission put together by two PhDs that says that if we were to have an EMP attack on America, within 6 months to 12 months, as many as 90% of the American people could be dead. Certainly, why? Because we couldn't get food delivered well. We wouldn't be able to get water. Our hospital system wouldn't work. We wouldn't be able simply to get gasoline for our cars. Your car might or might not work. And we'll talk to Dr. Pullman a little bit about cars and diesel trucks and the other things and computers. But basically, if you can't get fuel for them, why, it doesn't do any good. Now, Dr. Pullman, what about computers? How would they be impacted if they were simply plugged in, if they were not plugged in? What about automobiles? Because they certainly have tremendous amounts of computer function today, computer guidance. What happens if the car is hooked up? What happens if it isn't hooked up? Or do we know?
Well, we do know to some extent. The cars that are in structures are likely to be shielded. That is, if the structure has got, you know, cement and rebar and things like that. Cars that are turned off have survived when shocked by these machines that are supposed to emulate the EMP. But it's not clear that our machines, our testing machines, are really testing them strongly enough. Diesel trucks, on the other hand, will typically survive. Some odd things in your car might not work, like the radio. But if it's turned off, it stands to be survivable. If you disconnect your computer from the power line and from the cable boxes and the signal wires that come in from the telephone and that sort of thing, you can increase the survivability. And, of course, I've got about three old computers in the garage sitting there. Those are likely to survive. So if one of my computers goes out, I can bring another one in. But that doesn't help me if my cable system is down or my satellites have been wiped out because of the Van Allen belts that have been stimulated by the high altitude burst. Satellite systems are quite vulnerable. Solar arrays have been deteriorated to the point of inoperability in orbit over a period of months. So there's a lot of areas of vulnerability.
Well, now, why haven't we done what was logical? And that is lay in a good supply of transformers. I certainly get breakers all throughout the grid so that those breakers would prevent these massive surges from certainly going all across America through the grid system, which is tremendously interlocked. Why haven't we made the preparations to protect America?
Well, in fact, companies, responsible companies like the power company, and the phone company and so forth have taken measures to provide these spares. However, the probability of failure, absent the EMP actual threat, is very low. And so they are using one transformer to back up hundreds because they'll just lose one. But if you lose hundreds, you don't have that, and it's an economic impossibility to run a company if you have to have a spare for every piece in your network. You'd have to double the cost of everything, all your services.
Well, they seem to be doubling it under any circumstances. Now with the smart meters, a lot of people have seen their cost of electricity triple, and nobody seems to be concerned about that. And yet we're talking about something that would totally disrupt America. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question, certainly give us a call. We'd love to see if Dr. Pohlman could respond to it. But I am very, very concerned about the very real threat of an EMP attack. We do know that simply both the communist Chinese and the communist Russians, we don't like to talk about them as being communist countries, but they really are. And both of them have actually, at least from what we've been able to hear, considered the possibility of utilizing an EMP attack. Because, of course, in a direct nuclear war with America, they would lose. But if you could totally destroy our infrastructure, why? Of course, this would have a profound impact on our military capability, but also it would have a profound impact on certainly the morale of the American people. And certainly, if we were to disrupt the infrastructure of this country, it could have a devastating effect on everybody listening to the program tonight. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Carl, you know, from your talking to people, certainly as a physicist and certainly as a being well acquainted with these problems, do you sense that there is some degree of concern, at least on the part of some people, about this as a possibility? Or certainly as some people have said, well, it's just so horrible to contemplate that we don't even bother to talk about this as a problem, because if it happened, it would be just so devastating. What's the real truth about this?
Well, I think you have two things that you can look at. One is big countries like China and Russia depend on us for certain thing. They depend on us for grain, for corn and wheat and coal, and if we develop our energy sources, they're going to start to depend on us for that kind of fuel as well. So they're not likely to want to destroy us, because they will find that they can't feed their people from the food that we supply them as a part of international trade. The real risk in my mind is from rogue countries where the leadership are operating somewhat insanely. This is North Korea in the past, and of course Iran, and other countries are questionable as well. Pakistan, for example, and Libya, I think, has given up their ambitions. But we have these countries. Their technology is immature, incomplete, and not an immediate threat. But they have well-funded programs to come up with kind of a 1-2 shot kind of thing, and they may have the idea that EMP is a killer kind of thing. I happen to believe that it isn't totally. For example, the Soviet Union tested EMP over their own country, and they had some small amounts of infrastructure exposed, but they survived. And we have a huge amount of infrastructure, and so we're likely to see a large hit, but we have the capability to plan for this, and I think we have a few years to invest, and we need to do that. We need to plan and invest and strategize and model and follow the the guidance of these very smart people who have studied the problem and put the funding back into their organization and start developing a culture of knowledge and priorities so that we do this thing intelligently.
What do these very wise people who have really looked into this and done a lot of study on it, what do they think that should be done? Because basically, unless people actually were to get hold of the Congressional Commission report from 2004 or the Congressional Commission report for 2008, they would never hear about this. We almost never hear about it through the regular channels of communication, which is very disturbing. But what do these people say we ought to be doing?
Well, we ought to be doing more. We ought to be doing more testing. We ought to be putting
from the coal they can get from us, which is so necessary for their power plants, things of that sort. And basically, of course, down the line, if we really do become a major exporter of natural gas and oil, why, of course, is they would be dependent upon us for that. So Dr. Pullman doesn't think that Russia and China would launch an attack on America, but he thinks that perhaps some of these smaller countries, perhaps North Korea, some of the others, might actually consider that they would be able to have a devastating effect on America by launching an EMP attack. Dr. Pullman thinks that we ought to certainly take the advice of the people in these special commissions that have been set up, people who really study this at great length and have many suggestions what could be done and what should be done. And they've known for well over a decade that something should be done, and yet very little has been done. And it does not make sense, ladies and gentlemen. Whenever I see something that is so logical and it doesn't make sense, then I always come up with the conclusion there must be another reason. Well, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question about this issue. But I think this is vitally important because if there were to be an EMP attack was to happen, certainly it could be a major issue, it could be a minor one, but if it was a major issue, it could totally disrupt the economy of this nation. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, if it works, if they can put something up there and set it off, and not like we did in the South Pacific, where it affected Hawaii 800 miles away, if they put it right over the center of the United States. So here we have North Korea is trying to put together a multi-stage rocket to be able to put a small thermonuclear explosion wherever they want it. And we have not been funding completely the laser programs that the Navy needs in order to be able to shoot these things down. But we have Aegis cruisers that could shoot these things down. And to the extent North Korea has basically said, hey, our missiles are aimed at and being developed for attacking the United States, well, we ought to consider that that's a declaration of war, and everything they launch from here on out, we shoot down.
And certainly actually threaten the United States. And by so doing, of course, why are we not putting an embargo on them as we have on Iran, so that North Korea can't get funding from anywhere in the world and they can't get imports of the things that they need? And the most amazing thing is, ladies and gentlemen, doing those things, we're doing that with Iran. We've actually financed terrorist organizations, the PKK, working for many years there, assassinating and killing people in Iran, but we're not doing it in North Korea. We have severe sanctions on Iran, holding large amounts of money that they had deposited in banks, which we simply just seized. Certainly, we're putting embargoes on them, so they really cannot certainly exchange their money through regular banks now. We're doing all sorts of things to make life very miserable for Iran, but we're not doing any of those things for North Korea, which has actually threatened, certainly.
I'm a member pretty much ever since I got my degree, and an online article that is written by a gentleman who is an authority on the solar flares. And that'll give you a good background. This is Dr. John Kappelman, whose name appears in the EMP Commission report as a consultant. He runs his own company.
Hold that thought. Our number is 188824, Liberty.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear again to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for land so fair, as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountains to the prairie, to the ocean white with gold, God bless America.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Carl Pullman. We're talking about the danger of an EMP attack on America. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the thing is, we've known of the danger of this well over 12, 13 years, probably much longer than that. But this has really been intensely covered and worked on, and all sorts of reports coming out, and we have made no efforts or effective efforts to protect America. Certainly, we have our nuclear cruisers, and we have certainly they can shoot down incoming missiles. But what would happen if it were to be set off from the ship, in one of our ports, or a freighter just off the shores? We're talking about 30 seconds or a minute before this would strike. There'd be no time, unless you were really aware of the fact what was happening, why you'd have to make an instantaneous decision to shoot it down, and what would happen if there's several going at the same time. I mean, the possibility is not imaginary, it's very real, and we are totally inequipped to handle this and the destruction of the infrastructure of America. Our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-2295. Let's go to Shelley, who's calling us from Tri-Cities. Shelley, do you have a question or comment?
Well, I guess both, but mostly a comment. This is related to your topic tonight, but Bob Fletcher back in the fall had suggested we go Google underground cities and bases, and I did that and just really clicked on one thing and found about a 13-14 page article that truly got my attention. And it was about a underground base, and I believe it's Dulce, New Mexico, underground, and this former security guard who used to work there was telling about what was going on there, and it was just truly horrific. But it went several floors, I guess, layers down in the earth, and he could only go, he couldn't go past security clearance to go past the seventh floor. But one thing he said that was there, now they called them aliens. I think you and I would call them probably demon spirits. But there were, he said there were like 18,000 grays. That was the form they were called.
That sounds pretty far out, but who knows, you know. Basically, we live in a strange world. But there is no question, I don't know anything about grays or reptilian people or all these things. But I do know that the people who run the things do have a number of underground bases. Anybody can go up the internet and simply type in YouTube, Jesse Ventura, underground bases, or just underground bases. You'll find out that there really are. I know people I trust who've actually been in these underground bases. So I share your concern, Shelley. We live in an uncertain world, and you have to remember that the people in charge know something's coming down. Why have they then certainly doing everything they can to disarm the American people? Why have they bought 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition? Why have they laid in massive supplies of dehydrated food? And if you go up on the internet today, you'll find out that the Department of Homeland Security has bought over 100 tanks that will resist landmines. Why would the Department of Homeland Security buy buying tanks to use here in America? Anything else you want to say, Shelley, before we let you go?
Yes, one more thing.
Okay, do you have a question for our guest at all?
Well, what I wanted to say was that this security guard said that the aliens did not want the land, the gold, the minerals, or the water that we possess, nor even human or animal life. What they did want was the magnetic power that surges on and through the earth.
I think, Shelley, what he's doing, whoever put this up there, is trying to sound so ridiculous, they'll discredit everything else they say. And this is the standard technique. They put these things up. 90% of what they say is absolutely right, and then they put up something as ridiculous as the aliens who wanted to get the magnetic power, and by that they've discredited everything that's true that they've said. You have to be so careful of the material on the internet, because the enemy is using that as well. Okay?
Okay, well, thank you so much.
God bless you. Thank you, Shelley, and let's go to Jeff, who's calling from Spokane. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Dr. Pullman, do you have any comment at all on what Shelley was saying? Because, of course, he's talking about these aliens and magnetic power, and basically I think this fellow's trying to discredit everything that is true that he said, but basically he discredits everything right by putting up something that in foolish. What are your thoughts?
Well, it did make me think of one thing. I live very near some very large tank farms filled with flammable fluids. There's refineries down here in Southern California that seem to last for miles as you drive by them. And all the fuel and things like that are stored above ground, and an EMP comes in and creates a spark, that whole tank farm might go up in one giant explosion. That's where underground would be a good place to store a lot of the fluids that are flammable.
I agree with you totally. Well, let's go to Jeff calling from Spokane, Washington. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-2295. Jeff, do you have a question or comment?
I have a question. Good program tonight. I was an ex-Navy nuclear reactor operator on a submarine, and I'm wondering, as far as submarines are deployed at the time that this EMP strikes, that's not going to affect any of their operational capability. Is that correct?
That's pretty true, because you're surrounded by conducting salt water and Besides, they're going to target the center of the United States, and the submarines are generally offshore.
And I don't think that, Cynthia, I think most of our Navy units would be intact. It would be my impression as well. So anything, what, have anything else to ask,
well,
Jeff?
Yeah, what I was going for was, well, first off, if we had an intact Navy, at least we could retaliate against whoever proposed this attack so they couldn't follow up the attack with an invasion. But back several years ago when I was first in the service, there was a huge storm that took out much of Maui and Kauai and all. And my submarine pulled up to Lahaina, Maui, and we put shoreline onshore, and we powered up that entire city with our sole nuclear reactor on our submarine. We could have powered up probably half the state of half the county of Maui if we wanted to. And I was just wondering, you know, the Enterprise or the Nimitz or any of these big aircraft carriers, they could generate a lot of power if we found ourselves in trouble that way.
That's a very good thought, Jeff. I never even thought of that.
And it's been done before in many, many places.
Now, these nuclear submarines are fascinating materials. Certainly, we have a wonderful, wonderful Navy, and most of the people in the Navy are good, loyal Americans. It's just a shame that the people at the very top have gone along with what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. Anything else, Jeff?
Well, let me tell you, the reason I'm no longer in the Navy was because of what you exactly said. The guys I sailed with were incredible, even up to my commanding officer, but there were people at higher ranks up above that, and you could just see the direction that it was going, and it wasn't in a patriotic way up above, you know, the command structure that I saw.
Right.
And I just couldn't make myself stay in the service anymore seeing that the direction it was going. So thank you very much for your program, and I'll continue to listen here.
Okay, Jeff, God bless you. Thank you. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, basically what we would have to do would be to try to utilize whatever facilities that were available. Certainly the nuclear submarines would be able to work, and as long as, of course, they had the fuel, and, of course, there's nuclear rods, they will last for a good long time. Nuclear submarines can stay at sea for a good long while, and we're fortunate to have them. We have the largest fleet of nuclear submarines in the world by far. Tremendous, tremendous power. And a country that can create a nuclear submarine could certainly come up with alternatives to the damage that would destroy this nation from an EMP attack. And when we know how to do things, and as I've said before, we know what to do, it would be very easy, certainly with a minor expenditure of funding, to correct this problem, and there would be nothing to worry about. And we have to ask ourselves why we're not doing what's logical. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, certainly, Dr. Pohlman, as we look at this, how would this impact upon the availability of food in our communities? How would this impact an EMP attack influence the availability of water in our communities? You mentioned that the gravity water systems would work, but certainly if we could not pump certainly into the gravity system, why, of course, we would have a very real problem supplying water in the major cities, wouldn't we?
Oh, that's right, and our sewer systems, too. One thing long-term I'd like to mention, many of your listeners may not be aware of that, the legacy of Pons and Fleischmann, who were the first to create heat from a non-radiation-causing low-energy nuclear reaction, has been further developed, and it looks like in the near future there will be devices that will enable people to heat and possibly even generate electricity on a local basis at perhaps 1/6 the cost of petroleum fuel, and this does not create any CO2 for those that are trying to starve plants of the CO2 that they need. The misguided concern with saving the world by not burning carbon. But local generation of power and heat if we have it in small amounts everywhere, is extremely survivable in an EMP environment.
And I think you're absolutely right. In fact, there are many alternatives, certainly to the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, the other major utilities. There's an organization over in San Jose that actually was actually providing fuel cards. I think that they had, not sure exactly how they work, but they were certainly just almost like a deck of cards, a little larger than that, for the major companies over there, and at a fraction of the cost of the regular electricity. And basically, I saw this mentioned once on 60 Minutes and then totally blacked out since then. I've been to their website a number of times, and certainly, and I forgot to bioenergy, something of that sort. And this has been very effectively suppressed. Why? Because if you were able to actually replace the utilities, the people who own the utility stocks would be furious. They don't want that. They're aggressively increasing the cost of electricity. They know they're what they're doing, and they don't want you to have an alternative. Well, let's go to Bruce, who's calling from Durand, Michigan. Our telephone, is that Durand, Michigan, or Durand, Illinois, Bruce?
Durand, Michigan.
All right, fine. Go right ahead. Again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Bruce, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I wondered if pre-1970 cars and motorcycles were less vulnerable to EMP. I've heard a lot of things about teeth in the mouth frying and glasses frying on your face. So,
well, basically, what you're saying is we don't have a lot of computers in the pre-1970 cars and certainly in the motorcycles, things of that sort. A very, very good point. What are your thoughts on that, Carl?
Well, I think he's right. One of the things that you were talking about was little gas-driven generators. If we have our gas supply still working, and we're likely to have that back pretty quickly. We have lots of natural gas in this country, and if we had very simple lawnmower-sized natural gas engines that could generate power for our homes, people who live in rural areas could easily buy these things and keep them for their house as a backup. And even people who live in cities could do this, and within a few short years, we could have a backup power system that would be driven by the natural gas that we have in our gas pipeline systems.
So, Bruce, I think you're absolutely right. I think the older cars, things like motorcycles, it would be amazing what would happen if we could just unleash the imagination of the American people, harness their ability and their drive. If the government didn't get in the way, we would get around this.
Yeah. Unless the starfish and kingfish test back in 62, they did a lot of damage to Polynesia and Hawaii, but they didn't totally destroy the infrastructure there.
Right.
It did electrical damage, but they didn't knock everything out because they had a lot of vacuum tube.
Right. But basically, of course, this is a whole different world from what it was back there in 1960.
Oh, yeah. Is it microcircuitry that is the problem? Does your expert, is that what he concludes? It's microcircuitry, like a diode?
What is that, Dr. Pullman? Would that be the microcircuitry that we have in so many of our computers? Would this be the problem?
Well, the computers that we had up in Bonneville Power were transistorized. They weren't microcircuits. But we had this ground fault test where we took close to 200,000 volts and shorted it to ground across the street from the mainframe computers, all transistorized. They were all connected to a big ground plane system, and the whole building went up and down about 700 volt peak to peak relative to the phone line that came into the building, and they didn't miss a beat. So it depends on how you shield them and how you ground them, and this technology is possible, but is ignored.
And this is what we need, of course, is to have it grounded and shielded. Anyway, thanks very much, Bruce. Let's go to Al calling from Nice, California. Hi, Al, do you have a question or comment?
I certainly do. Hi, Dr. Stan. I have a question for your guest regarding, I have a system, and the system, the solar tracker panels. I also have a 24K generator, two inverters, and the industrial batteries. I'm going to attempt to get them covered. Do you have any suggestions as to what and exactly how I should do that?
Well, you mean you want to get them hardened against EMP?
Yeah, I think you want something like a Faraday cage.
Correct.
Well, you have a very high voltage, very high current wave that's nanoseconds high that is coming at you, and it would be best to shield, build some wire around the surface of things and tie it all together so that everything goes up and down with this pulse at the same time. That would be about as best you could do. The other thing is, if you've got warning, turn everything off, and so that you don't have the voltages of normal operation going, but everything just goes up and down relative to each other.
Al, do you have any other questions?
Just one quick one.
Hold that thought then. Our guest this evening has been Dr. Carl Pohlmann. We've been talking about the very real threat of an electromagnetic pulse attack. We have an excellent 4-CD set on this. We have an excellent, it's called The Threat of an EMP Attack. We have an excellent DVD. We have an excellent book, A Nation Forsaken. And lastly, we have the 2004 Congressional Commission Report. They're all available by calling 1-800-548-9927. I'll go right ahead.
So now my generator is a little, about 100 feet from my inverter, etc. I will cover that separately. But are you saying if everything was turned off, it would not be damaged at all?
Well, it would help. And also, if everything that is connected to a long wire were disconnected from that long wire as close to the equipment as possible, in a way that when you want to restart it, you can go and throw those switches back so that you don't have any long pigtails out there picking up a signal and conducting it back into your equipment.
And I think it's basically because the long wire will tend to pick up the EMP, and just like a bolt of lightning will tend to explode into your electronic equipment, so you just don't want any long aerials or antennas out there. Okay.
I understand. Well, one more quick question, and that is, in regards to the solar panels, is there any way to save them? I cannot cover them, so is there any way to save them, or will they be destroyed too?
Well, the solar panels out in space that were on the satellites were not immediately destroyed by the high-altitude burst, but the charged particles that were washing back and forth in the Van Allen belts over a period of 10 years gradually decreased, but that the presence of those ionized particles degraded the solar arrays. So if you've got good space quality solar arrays, they probably will survive. And you're not going to see the same ion densities like you see in the Van Allen belts close to the Earth.
Okay, Al, does that answer your questions?
That does, and thank you so much. God bless you both.
God bless you, and of course, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Dr. Carl Pohlmann. We have about 30 seconds for you to wrap up the program for us, Carl. What are your thoughts you'd like to live with our people out across America?
Well, I think basically you can't depend on the government to protect yourself. You've got to protect yourself by thinking, by learning. Get some of the stuff that Dr. Stan has, the information. Go to the Internet and do some Google searches, and you'll find there's a lot of information out there. And then put it all together and try to make sure that you have a good water supply, that you have some food that isn't going to depend on refrigeration.
And, okay, God bless, and thank you so very much. Give my best to your wife. We'll talk to her tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Good enough. See you tomorrow.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you've enjoyed the interview with Dr. Carl Pohlmann. And our telephone number, if you'd like to get the items we listed, 1-888 is 1-800 877-544-4897. Now, we have a 4-CD set on the threat of an EMP attack. We have a DVD on the threat of an EMP attack, an interview with actually a talk given by Ambassador Henry Cooper. We carry the book, A Nation Forsaken, written by a gentleman who actually worked for the Defense Department for 30 years, Michael Maloof, and Michael, when he quit the Defense Department a few years ago, was a senior policy analyst reporting directly to the Undersecretary of Defense. And Michael's Sydney book on A Nation Forsaken gives you an excellent overview of what's really going on and the very real dangers that people in the Defense Department know are there and are being thoroughly suppressed by the people who control the media. The media in America is controlled. If you don't believe it, you need to get the book, The Media Monopoly by Dr. Ben Bandikian. We carry the book, The New Media Monopoly is the title, The New Media Monopoly. And then, of course, we have the 4-CD set, we have the DVD, we have the book, and then we have the Congressional Commission Report. And that's for the year 2004. You can get them all by calling 1-800-544-8927. Certainly go up on the internet. We don't know, but we do know there's a very real threat. We do know there is an organized, coordinated effort to block the legislation that's been enacted by both the Senate and the House to actually do something. And we have to ask ourselves why. But then, of course, we understand there are all sorts of alternative agendas out there that have really, and I believe, of course, America is not mentioned in Scripture. I believe that we may very well be the Babylon that's mentioned, that is destroyed literally overnight. And the merchants of the world weep because they no longer can buy and sell. Babylon, this Babylon, was the financial center of the world. What is the financial center of the world today? Why, it's New York City, ladies and gentlemen. Read the scriptures, get your concordance out, and the merchants of the world wept because no longer could they sell their wares. And I really believe that something terrible is going to happen. I believe God is going to bring his vengeance upon this country. And basically, I think that we are going to have to certainly be prepared to look after ourselves. And then we're going to have to put our faith in the Lord. And basically, we do make the preparations for ourselves, for our friends. But in the final analysis, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And I believe, as Thomas Jefferson said, that God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. But can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. Words of Thomas Jefferson, they are actually chiseled into the white marble of the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. Well, this is the time when I hope that you'll want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read it, you will, because it will give you insight into what's really going on. And then this week and next week will be the last times we'll be offering certainly our cases of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. But it's an excellent weapon. We got an order for 2 cases today. We appreciate the people who made the offer. We're doing fairly well. We're just about halfway through. And, well, certainly as the end of next week, we will no longer make the offer. We're just going to go ahead, put the order in, and get the book reprinted by the case. We'll be, how many thousands of copies, we don't know. But if you're interested, this will be this week and next week and after that. Why, you're just going to have to pay the regular price for it. But we want to make it as attractive as we can. So if you'd like to get a case of the books, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we throw in either a 4-CD set or a DVD we've produced to help you with the shipping. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America, but please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision, and our protection.
Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today. It is the 4th of March. It is Monday, 2013. We got a whole week to do the next right and honorable thing, to bring you the truth as we find it. And today will be no exception on the Power Hour. In the second hour, we're going to be dealing with something that I think many of you have been wanting to hear about, a subject that most of us know nothing about. That is the Bayou Corn Salt Dome collapse. Why it happened, who is doing it, Jesse Waltman will join us. He has an amazing website, MrCometWatch.com, that I'd like for you to check out, MrCometWatch.com. We'll have it at the news section, or at the guest section, so you can check it out. And, of course, in the news is that major, major collapse of a sinkhole in Florida where one man was sucked down the hole. I mean, can you imagine anything more?